One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Howdy, friends, and thanks for joining us here again on Expanded Perspectives. I'm Cam, and as always, over here with me is Mr. Kyle Vilson.
How's it going, everybody?
Hey, we have got a really fun one today. This is something that I think everybody's going to... Before we get any further, I want to go ahead and say this. Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. This is going to be a day late, so happy Mother's Day. Hope everybody had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Hope you kind of got pampered, got your foot rubbed.
Hi,
got
Mom.
Got you some favorite food, whatever you got, right. You know... And I hope you're going to enjoy this, because we really did. This is something that Kyle and I...
It's a hot topic right now.
It is a very hot topic.
It just happened.
Yeah, and we've been kind of on the down low, kind of keeping our eyes on this whole thing of the Roswell slides that was released, okay? Now, this weekend, it was released in Mexico City. And for those of you that don't know, I'm going to give you a little quick rundown. Now, they say these Roswell slides were allegedly found in a home of a couple named Bernard and Hilda Ray. Now, this couple lived in Midland, Texas. Now, mm-hmm. The wife was an attorney, and Bernard was a geologist. And they think that they had provable links, of course, Bernard did, to the state of New Mexico and in the area of Roswell.
Yeah, he was doing oil and gas work
exactly.
In the area of Roswell. That's right.
So, and we've talked about it a little in the past, but anyway, they believe that this was a big deal, that this was all on the up and up, and apparently these people had passed away, had no children. And the story, I believe, goes that somebody was going through their house, and they were going through it, and they found these Kodachrome
yep.
slides in the attic, and it was with a bunch of photographs of other stuff, and then there are these two slides of this little alien body, allegedly, and well...
They had it looked at by a professional, and he authenticated it. The dates were right.
The Kodachrome pictures.
Yes.
The Kodachrome pictures. Not what's in the picture, but the Kodachrome picture was...
The photograph
was
legit.
Time. Yes.
It's not photoshopped or anything like that.
It's a real photograph.
That's right.
Of a small body. And turns out it's probably not what this really is. And this is all pretty much you can say is hit the fan is what's going on right now. And we got to talk to our buddy, Miguel, Mr. Red Pill Junkie. And he lives there in Mexico City. And Kyle and I, we've all discussed it and talked to him a while back. And Miguel had told us, you know what? I think I'm going to go. He wasn't going to go at first. And then he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to go. So he went and sat through the whole thing. And then, you know, we've talked to him now. And
he starts describing it to us
what
happened that day and how it was going. And then about midway through the conversation, Micah Hanks calls in. And then he joins the group, too, with his own thoughts. So,
and he's found some interesting stuff out, too.
Very interesting stuff.
Yeah, so. It ties into that. So pretty much this whole thing caught fire and flared up over the weekend, and then looks like it's been squashed by this time now. So, I mean, it didn't last long, and it is a really, it's kind of an in-depth look of what can really happen if you're not on your toes on a lot of this stuff. So, we really enjoyed the heck out of having this conversation. It's something we'd looked forward to, and it's kind of something we'd felt like was going to happen all along. Well, it did. So, and I guess without further ado, folks, we're going to cut into the break right quick. And as soon as we come back, y'all are going to be listening to us and Red Pill and Mr. Micah Hanks. So stick around and get ready to get your heads blown open by a little crazy alien autopsy slides, old school stuff. You're listening to Expanded Perspective.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we alluded to it earlier. Weeks ago, we had Miguel on the show, and he said we asked about if he was going to go and go to this Roswell slide reveal. And he actually went there, and as we promised, we'd have him report back. So, Red Pill, tell us about what happened that day, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I can tell you what didn't happen. And what didn't happen is, you know, the big reveal and the tumbling down of the wall of secrecy and the dawn of a post-disclosure world. That certainly wasn't the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
What did happen is that after a long presentation, and I mean 6 hour long presentation, they finally released the two so-called Roswell slides, while at the same time trying to explain the story behind the slides, how the slides were allegedly discovered, how they fell in the hands of a friend of Adam Dew, who is the producer of the Slidebox Media, which is a company that the company that allegedly holds the copyrights of the slides, and from there how Tom Curry and Don Schmidt got involved, and from then they got Jaime Maussan involved, and then the rest of the people who went there, either well, they're physically on stage or were merely present on a Skype link. Like, for example, Mr. Paul Hellier, who gave a small chat during the presentation, and they also show a recorded interview with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who sadly wasn't able to be present at the live presentation due to health complications.
Hmm. And who else spoke there?
Who else spoke there? Well, a guy by the name of James J. Hurtak, who I had never heard of prior to the May 5th event, although it seems here in his resume, and by the way, they gave a small pamphlet to each assistant, so I'm using it to reinforce my notes. So I'm reading here that Hurtak is some kind of scientist, a futurologist, founder of the Academy for Future Science, which is some kind of NGO, and he apparently collaborated with the late Dr. John Mack in that famous case of a close encounter that occurred on a school in Africa. I don't know if you guys have heard of that case.
Yeah, really, I've heard of that. Yeah, that's a fascinating case. I remember that, where the kids were all outside during recess or something.
Yeah, something like that. I think it happened in 1995, so 20 years ago. So in any case, the guy spoke there, and to be honest, I really didn't understand what he was doing there. I mean, he certainly didn't seem to have been involved in the actual investigation surrounding the slides, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, he seems to have been to have investigated Roswell in some capacity, but, well, anyway, he was there, along with, like I said, Paul Hellier also gave a small speech, you know, with regards to disclosure and all that jazz. And to be honest, at one point, I really feel that it was like this either was like what you will call filler or, you know, padding, you know, in order to stretch the presentation, you know, before the let's just the alien money shot, so, shall we say?
Exactly.
Of showing the slides and say, okay, so here it is. No. Before all that, Tom Curry and Don Schmidt also gave a somewhat quick recap of the whole of Roswell case, and you could say, oh, they're just stalling, or you could argue that maybe they were justified in trying to bring the audience up on speed with the whole details surrounding the Roswell case. You know, I mean, after all, this was given before a Mexican audience. Maybe the Mexican public is not as well versed on the whole Roswell case as would be people in the United States.
Right.
And from that, then it was a turn of this Adam Dew character, right? So the guy who came up with the slides in the first place. And like I said, he gave a story of how he came about with the slides, how the sister of a friend of his, apparently she has some kind of business in charge of clean up houses, howling business of some sort, and she accidentally found a box containing around 400 or so slides that at first she didn't think much about it. You know, she saw a few of them, found them interesting, and decided to take the box to her home. And then, in some reason, she managed to see that there were two slides conveniently hidden away inside the box itself, right? Like someone had deliberately separated like the bottom of the cardboard box and then placed there in the two slides in question, right? The ones that they were going to reveal, and then glued back together the box. So one of the arguments they made is, okay, so if the slides are something trivial or mundane, how come somebody took all the trouble to hid them away?
Right.
So then they proceeded to talk about who allegedly took the slides, and those would be Hilda and Bernard Ray. And the reason they think that is because some of these slides show this couple, and who they were is that apparently they were a very well-connected couple. Hilda was not only a lawyer, but she also was a pilot, you know. And yeah, that actually is quite remarkable, even for these days. And Bernard, her husband, was a geologist who apparently worked in the New Mexico, Texas area. So there is another alleged piece of the puzzle, like trying to establish the couple near the place where the Roswell crash is said to have happened, right? In New Mexico area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they also show some of the other slides, you know, the slides that show people, very famous and influential people from the 1940s and 1950s, like, for example, Clark Gable, the famous actor, Bing Crosby, the famous singer, who apparently is shown playing golf in some kind of charity tournament or whatever, and also some images showing President Ike Eisenhower. So The argument is that the Rays were very good friends with President Eisenhower and his wife, Mamie Eisenhower. So that's kind of like the argument they're trying to make with the slices. Oh, so this was a very well-connected couple. They had close ties with people in high places. Therefore, there might have been privy to very sensitive material, like, for example, you know, recovered alien bodies from the Roswell saucer crash.
And joining us now, we didn't know this was going to happen, impromptu on the phone, we have another esoteric man himself, Mr. Micah Hanks. How are you?
Hey, brothers. Good to be here. Miguel, glad to be here with you as always, man.
Likewise, amigo.
I mean, we're so blessed that we all get to kind of catch up a little more often these days and try and put our heads together to try and solve world mysteries.
Yeah, well, moving on and keeping with the story, Miguel had just finished telling us about the history of how these slides came into the possession of the people. Now, after they got done breaking down the history, Miguel, mm-hmm. how did they go about revealing the last two slides, the most important slides?
Well, first, they were trying to prove to the audience, you know, and the skeptics, how the slides were actually what they claimed to be, right? Real slides from the 1940s and not some kind of forgery. So they gave the testimony, a recorded testimony of a few film experts. Let me see if I find the name of the person who... Okay, Professor Rhodes Lemons, who apparently is some kind of film expert that works in Rochester, New York. And he was shown on a recorded interview saying that, in his opinion, because of a few factors like, you know, frame numbers and whatnot, the slates were not fake.
Right.
So they were, in fact, slates dating back to the 1940s, right?
Right.
And then before going through the big reveal, and I really was like, okay, here it comes. And then, oh, no, not yet, right? Before that, they also showed some testimonies from Roswell witnesses, or what passes as Roswell witnesses, right, nowadays. You know, people who heard their daddy or their friends talk about how the aliens look like. And they also showed an interview with this guy, Eleazar Benavides, you know, who was, you know, promoted as the star witness of the whole case. You know, the guy who really bring this whole thing, joining it together, because according to his testimony, and bear in mind that some people had brought his testimony into question. But anyway, he says how he was at the Roswell base, stationed at the Roswell base when the alleged Roswell crash happened, and that he was in charge of guarding something that at first he didn't really know what it was about. You know, his superiors told him, you know, the less you know about it, the better. But, you know, then the curiosity got the better of him, and finally he managed to get a glimpse of what he was transporting from some base hangar to the base hospital, you know, and what he saw was some kind of alien body. And then they show in the interview how they show him the slides, you know, and obviously in that, at that moment, you're still, the audience still hasn't seen the slides. They're just seeing his reaction, right? Mm-hmm. And his reaction, let me just point out, it wasn't like, oh my God, this is what I saw those years ago. It wasn't like that at all. It was like, well, it kind of looks like that, you know. It has some of the features, although the one I saw had more meat on it, you know, meaning it wasn't that slim as the body that appeared right on the slide, which, like I said, weren't still revealed at all. So take that as you will, right? It wasn't in my mind a 100% endorsement from the quote-unquote star witness, but that didn't stop Maussan and saying, you know, the witness confirms it, you know, ergo, this slide is from the Roswell crash.
Right.
Right? And then finally, they showed the first slide on the screen, and well, what can I say? You know, people were silent because they hadn't. I'm sure that most of them haven't had a chance to search online for the blurred version of the slide that had already been leaked 2-3 months prior to the event, right?
Right.
So people were seeing it, and I finally got to see it and say, okay, so yeah, I finally get to see this in a much clearer picture, right? And it still looked like some kind of mummy encased some kind of museum glass showcase, right? But at least you could still see something of the odd features of the mouth and the nose, or lack of nose, more exactly, and the eyes and all that. And then that's when we first had a rhesus, right?
Right.
And after that is when Maussan proceeded to present the three experts who will give their forensic analysis, the one that will rule out, according to them, how the body in the slide was not a desiccated mummy, was not a child, was not even a primate, was not even a mammal, according to them, right?
Right.
They said that it was closer to some kind of reptile or had some kind of avian characteristics, right? So the first expert on stage was a guy by the name of José de Jesús Salce Benítez. Oh, and I'm forgetting that before he walked and started to talk on the podium, some kind of representative from the INACIF, that is the Instituto Nacional de Ciencias Forenses, which is like the Mexican National Institute of Forensic Sciences, presented to Maussan on stage a published report that was elaborated by Salce, you know, in which they present, you know, the scientific evidence that the body, according to them, wasn't a human being, right?
Right.
And they also wanted to make it very clear for everyone to hear how they hadn't charged any kind of money for their work, right? So
right.
People wouldn't say, oh, right, you know, they said whatever Maussan wanted them to say because he paid them. So, well, whether that's true or not, you know, that's what they said on stage. And then Jesús Salce Benítez proceeded to gave his presentation. And, well, who is this guy? This guy apparently is affiliated to the Mexican Navy. He is a medical examiner. He has some kind of a very impressive resume, you know, all kinds of studies and diplomas. And so he proceeded to give what seemed to me, and I obviously am not, I'm a layman, right? So I don't really know much about anatomy, biology, aside from the things that I learned when I was in high school, you know, taking anatomy and all that. So, but still, it seemed that to me he was very proficient and very professional in explaining point by point all the morphological anomalies present that he was able to detect in the body, like the fact that the rib cage, you could only see six or maybe even seven ribs in the rib cage, whereas in a human body you usually have 12. All these kind of weird anatomical features that to him pointed out that this body was incompatible with human life. And then, you know, reinforcing that argument was the recorded testimony of a guy by the name of Richard Doble, who they say is some kind of academician, a Canadian academician, a former college professor. And he also said that according to him, you know, this wasn't a mummy. This wasn't a child. It had too many weird features, you know. And at that point, I felt that these guys were probably overinterpreting what they were able to see in the slides. You know, they were reaching to conclusions that, in my opinion, were, you know, too exaggerated. I mean, Doble said that he felt that maybe these beings communicated with some kind of electromagnetical feature. And I was like, really, bro? I mean, you know, aren't you like jumping out into too much of a sci-fi explanation? The other guy who also talked after that was Dr. Luis Antonio de Alba Galindo, who seems to be some kind of private physician. He's also a college professor, and he also gave his interpretation. And also, I think that he went a bit too far with the overinterpreting. You know, he has to say, well, the body clearly seems to have evolved in some kind of a low gravity environment. And wait a minute, man. I mean, you are able to deduct all that from one single grainy image of a body which is only perceived at a very limited angle. You know, you can't see the body from more sides, more angles. How can you say all that about one single image? Come on.
Right. Well, that's why I wanted to have your interpretation of it, because you were the only person I know that was an eyewitness that was there that day that saw the entire 5 or 6 hour presentation, and you got to really see it all. Now, I know that Micah's into these things. Micah, you saw the photographs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, at present, higher resolution images. Now, granted, we assumed that while Miguel was there in Mexico City at the event, as well as Richard Dolan and others, the streaming version of the event carried online, that was a pay-per-view stream, essentially. Many people, including our friend Chase Kletsky, actually paid and accessed that. It was assumed, and correctly so, that people would be grabbing screen grabs of the image that was displayed. And those appeared online that evening. But since then, better quality images, maybe not the highest resolution, but I would at least say at this point, higher resolution images have been made available on the website, which is slideboxmedia.com, that is essentially the site hosting the Kodachrome documentary. I've got that image up in front of me right now, and I'm looking at the, again, what is now more obvious than ever before, a mummy. And I just want to say that, based on what, Miguel was talking about and a lot of the questions that he had and his questions about the logic that was being applied by the people who were promoting this, I fundamentally agree and felt that there were a lot of conclusions that were being leapt to by people. Again, the strangest of them being that, as I believe you said, Miguel, that someone had said that they thought that this thing had avian characteristics or something that were non-mammal. In the lineage of all life on planet Earth, I've never ever once seen anything that was so obviously humanoid and hence so obviously mammalian in my life that supposedly qualified experts tried to make a case against. But this does remind me of a similar case a few years ago that Jaime Masson was involved with, in which it was probably something akin to a I don't think it was a howler monkey. I think it was actually a little macaque.
Oh, yeah. What was that called? The metapec? What was that?
The metapec alien. Yeah.
I remember I wrote a blog about this saying this is obviously a monkey that either was mummified and found or possibly that it had been killed and skinned. I mean, I didn't want to have to bring the obvious disconcerting aspects of that in a public forum down to a discussion about animal abuse. But I mean, because that was speculative. We didn't know what the fate of the monkey was, but nonetheless, it was so obviously a monkey, And the thing is that Jaime Masson, at that time when I talked about this, Miguel, you were the one who even brought to my attention. You said, and I just got to speak very frankly here. I've met Masson very briefly at one of the UFO conferences. I've seen the kinds of things he's involved himself in terms of promotion of UFOs. I think he's a guy who's got a genuine interest in this, but like a lot of researchers, there are many who are, enthusiastic promoters who I think have a genuine, honest interest in this, like Masson, but they're not necessarily qualified experts, and they're certainly not individuals who are maybe going about things in terms of the highest forms of ethics when it comes to billing and promoting something to the public. They're more willing to get something out there and speculate about what it is and try and withhold certain information that might be contrary to that speculation or supposition, for purpose of being able to sensationalize something. And so the minute Jaime Masson got involved with this Roswell slides thing, I was ready to write it off, which is what was so disturbing to me about the fact that Richard Dolan became involved, because I want to be very clear. I consider Rich a friend. Rich is a man of integrity. I'm not holding him.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
Yeah. We both, Miguel and I know Rich pretty well. We've had talks with him. We've drank coffee with him. I've been on his show and he's been on mine. Let there be no question about, my friendship and my respect for Richard Dolan. And I should also point out is there are a lot of people out there trying to drag him into this and say that, Rich, he was on stage, he was promoting this too. Rich, within minutes of the end of that event, had gone on Coast to Coast AM, and he was saying on Coast to Coast, he was being asked some very pointed questions by George Norrie, and he said, if I had to bet on it being a hoax, I wouldn't say it's a hoax, but I'm not really really ready to commit to the idea that this is something related to Roswell. So, you know, Rich was trying to carry himself, I think, as ethically and as carefully and as skeptically as he could. But I think that he, like a lot of people, was probably under the impression that based on the testimony given by the experts that presented at this event, that, well, these qualified experts saw this, so maybe there's something more to it.
And let me point out, Micah, that I had the chance to briefly talk to Richard this week, you know, during the interview that Gene and Chris gave with me, the interview that they had me with for the Paracast. Gene managed to have Richard for a few minutes, you know, to chime in and give his opinion. And I had the chance to ask Richard whether he had had the chance to speak in private with the experts, you know, to learn more about their intentions, their personality, and why they decided to get involved in all this. Mm-hmm. Richard said that he did in fact have the chance to talk to these guys, but due to the language barrier, apparently these individuals weren't really proficient in speaking in English. Mm-hmm. You know, it was he had a very limited conversation with them, right? But nevertheless, he felt that both were credible. You know, were being objective, especially Jesus Salce Benitez. And to be honest, I also felt that of the three individuals involved, the three so-called experts, he struck me as the one more credible than the rest. But nevertheless, I still would have liked to ask him whether he will have accepted Maussan's invitation to participate in this whole affair had he had the chance to see the slides before traveling to Mexico. And that wasn't the case at all. He accepted the slides to participate before seeing the slides. I think that the reason to doing so because Don Schmidt and Tom Curry convinced him, and maybe that's my opinion, that was the mistake that he made.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the case. And I got to point out something else about these qualified experts. You know, you got to be very careful taking an expert's opinion on something mm-hmm. when there's so much obfuscation like what we've seen here. And by that, what I mean is, yeah, sure, obviously some individuals were allowed to look at this image, but as I want to talk about here in a minute, and this is something that, as far as I know, this is absolutely breaking as of 3:46 p.m. East Coast time, Mother's Day Sunday. I'm sitting here talking with you guys about this. I've been going back and forth with Paul Kimball, Race Hobbs, Greg Bishop, Chris Rutkowski most of the morning and afternoon. This website has been put up, and this breaking information about a new analysis of this photograph. Have you guys been following this development?
Yeah, a little bit. You were talking to me this morning about it. And I've been watching. I've been keeping my eye on it, and it's pretty interesting. Tell everybody what you're talking about.
I want to give a little bit of an overview because I think that the thing is that this puts in the proper context. You know, I think maybe in terms of archaeology and anthropology, what we're dealing with. Whereas taken out of that context, or maybe in the case of the Roswell slide, never having been properly put into that context, it's easy to see why maybe a biologist or, you know, even a historian like Richard Dolan would come into this, look at this outside of the proper historical and scientific context, look at it and with that predisposed idea toward we may be looking at an anomaly, what is this? Then we try and come to a determination about it. I think that that's what leads to a lot of the breakdowns in communication and a lot of the misunderstandings about what we may be dealing with. But the essential story unfolds like this. Race Hobbs of the KGRA Network brought it to my attention this morning that there were new claims that one of the placards associated with the photograph was a hoax.
Oh.
And I thought, okay, that's a strange claim. So he linked, and actually it was late last night that he sent me this link, but I was traveling last night and I was actually in Atlanta. And at the slideboxmedia.com, which hosts the site, you know, that promotes the Kodachrome documentary about this, there is a series of links at the top that discuss the documentary, what is being referred to now as Kodachrome Slide 11, which is, of course, the famous slide with the body. And then there's a link now that says Real Placard, and it shows an image of it. You scroll down the page, and it actually states the following that I found very interesting. This apparently from Dew and presumably those who are involved, you know, with promoting this. So, you know, I will collectively refer to this as the owners, but of course us at this point would presume this also involves Jaime Masson, you know, Tom Carey, Don Schmidt, etc. At the side it reads, the Roswell slides, and if anyone wants to look at this, by the way, it's one word, slideboxmedia.com/placard. And it reads at that page, the Roswell Slides Research Group Fake Placard. And they have that with an image on the left. It says, this is the Photoshopped original that the group is claiming they worked before they claimed de-blurring. And then they show the original scanned image during the Slidebox, or shown on the Slidebox site. What they're claiming here, as you scroll down the page, it says, the Roswell Research Group claimed to have de-blurred the placard, but we have our doubts because we have been unable to replicate their results using the same software. We're in contact with the software company and are requesting their analysis of the authenticity of the group results. And what we see here is we see a placard that it's still blurry, but you can now clearly read out the lettering on the card that rests next to what presumably is the right leg of the mummy. And this is what the card actually reads. It actually, I'm doing my best just to read this from the page here, but there's actually a translation that appears at the Roswell Slides Research Group page, which we'll get to in a moment. It says, mummified body of 2-year-old boy. And that can very clearly be read here. And then at the bottom, you can also see what appears to be a name with two initials, a name, and then San Francisco, California. Hmm. So they say, we suspect, the owners of the image at their website, we suspect that they, the Roswell Slides Research Group, created their own modified version. So at this point, I was actually asking, who is this Roswell Slides Research Group? I didn't even know that there was somebody calling themselves this or operating under that. Interestingly, this is a group that is composed of the following individuals: Jose Antonio Caravaca, Isaac Coey, Nab Latour, the French skeptic, Lance Moody, Tim Prenti, Kurt Collins, Tim Herbert, my friend Paul Kimball, Giles Fernandez, another friend of mine, Chris Rutkowski, Roger Glassell, and then also Stephen Smiles Lewis. And then we've also got guys who are associated with them, including Felipe Hernandez, Aaron Goulias, who I've had on my program before, and of course our buddy Nick Redfern. Mm-hmm. A lot of these folks are kind of associated with this. At their website, which is roswellslides.com, they offer an interesting rebuttal. They show, first of all, the enhanced image, and then they also offer their translation of the full text, which reads as follows: mummified body of 2-year-old boy. At the time of burial, the body was clothed in a cotton shirt. Burial wrappings consisted of these small cotton blankets. So doing a search for those terms, as well as San Francisco, California, because it says at the bottom, loaned by Mr. and then they can't decipher the name of San Francisco, California. This is where things began to take an interesting turn based on – and again, I want to point out that while they're claiming that this is a Photoshop job, that is so utterly foolish to me, because if you go over to the UFO Chronicles website, Frank Warren did his own independent analysis with the same software, and he came to the same determination. I've got, I believe, his determination about what the card reads. He says, his translation rather reads, mummified body of 2-year-old boy. And then he also gives the, this may have been Kurt Collins who actually did this analysis at the time of the burial, and then he gives the same information I just gave. So Frank Warren's got that over there on his website, and he talks about this as well. So it seems, and then Leslie Gunter finally on Facebook earlier today had also pointed out that she had also been following this and saw that there were others who used this software. I believe the actual deblurring software that they used is called Smart Deblur. Leslie Gunter also pointed out that there are others who've used this program. It's commercially available, and that they've gotten the same results, and they can clearly see now a mummified body of 2-year-old boy. So I started digging around based on this translation, talking about the time of the burial. The body was clothed in cotton shirt and burial wrappings. These wordings are pretty distinct. And then the fact that someone from San Francisco, California donated this to this collection, we haven't determined where it was, but by digging around online, I was able to find a website at the Mesa Verde National Park, or pertaining to the Mesa Verde National Park, at npshistory.com. On that website, there's an article from September 1938, Volume 3, Number 1 of the Mesa Verde Notes. I want to read the relevant text here from you. According to the count of finger and nose prints on the glasses, the most popular exhibits in the Park Museum are the Spruce Treehouse Diorama and the Case of Bones that show the diseases of the Cliff Dwellers. The glass on the diorama is smudged so much that it has to be washed every 2 hours. So it sounds, okay, like we have the name of a museum. Why do I link this one to it? Next paragraph reads as follows. A splendid mummy was received by the Park Museum recently when Mr. S.L. Palmer Jr. of San Francisco returned one that his father had taken from the ruins in 1894. The mummy is that of a two-year-old boy and is in an excellent state of preservation. At the time of burial, the body was clad in a slip-over cotton shirt, three small cotton blankets. Fragments of these are still on the mummy. Remarkably similar text. And so I have to say that when we read this and we look at this, it seems fairly obvious to me that what we're dealing with is a description of the same. I went back to the enhanced image that's at the Roswell Slides website, and you can almost read it right there next to the San Francisco. You can see that there are two initials, and then Palmer. The second initial is quite clearly the L. The first one, because of the blur, looks a lot like a C, but it's, you know, safe to assume probably that is indeed an S.L. Palmer of San Francisco, California, the very same that was mentioned there in the Mesa Verde Notes from September of 1938. So at this point, I'm going to link all this over at my website, MicahHanks.com, and let people look for themselves. But I am almost without a doubt convinced that the mummy in the photograph is actually a mummy that was on display at that museum in question here, the Park Museum, and that the mummy was donated by S.L. Palmer Jr. of San Francisco. His father had taken it from the Mesa Verde ruins in 1894. And that the mummy described here and shown in the photograph are one end of the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it looks like.
Now I'm going to enjoy my coffee.
Now, what pisses me off about all this is that the Roswell slide team managed to do in less than 48 hours what these other guys were allegedly not able to do in over 3 years.
Exactly. Why was that? Why did nobody? They had all this time to analyze this photograph. No, none of them tried to de-blur it. And by the way, the information about the source of the mummy, I've been in touch with Paul Kimball to see if he actually, if those guys have determined this themselves. If not, I've passed that information along to him, and I've just received a message from him. I haven't read it, but that information I've passed along to them as well, and I'm hoping they'll get that up on the site.
So 20 right. years ago, basically, they found these slides, and like we said, it's taken this long. And nobody did anything with them. It was because nobody, what it was, is they laid there. Somebody finally is like, you know what? I wonder if I can make some money off of them now.
Well, you mm-hmm. know what?
Now's the perfect time to try to fool somebody. Maybe they won't remember where this thing actually came from.
Yeah, let's throw it out there. And Adam Dew were clearly in this theme for the money. I mean, Adam Dew gave an interview on Open Minds. I think Alejandro Rojas was the one who interviewed him. And he admitted on the record, you know, he tried to promote to show it in the United States, but no one was able to give him the amount of monetary compensation he was expecting, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that he said that there was one prominent magazine that wanted to publish the slides, but they weren't willing to give him any money, so he turned them down, and here comes then Mao San, who says, no, we are going to show them in Mexico, and we're going to have this big event and the National Auditorium with a live audience of 10,000 witnesses, and we're going to change history. And I'm sure the guy said, yeah, whatever, man, so just get me the money I want.
Yeah. By the way, I just since I'm coming back into the conversation a little late here, I took a minute to read this message from Paul Kimball, and he's going to join me tomorrow to talk about this a little on the Graylian.
Ooh, but that's going to be great.
Yeah, I'd hope to try and get Kowski as well. You know, honestly, I'd love to have Richard Dolan on, but I think what in fairness would be better, I might try and reach out to him, but as busy as he is, I understand he's probably got a lot going on. His program will air immediately after mine, and so I'm going to give my own breakdown, and then I think what Rich will probably do is he'll probably give a follow-up on his program. So we'll be doing our shows live back-to-back. And there, you know, there won't have to be any animosity, because I think Rich is going to look at all this probably just like we are and say, okay, you know, it was there. I gave these people the benefit of the doubt. The information forthcoming is contrary to what was billed, and we have to look at it for what it is. But this is what's interesting. Everything I've just, you know, thought I'd crack the case on, I just brought it to Paul's attention. And he actually has said that is for the Mesa Verde thing, yeah, Bregaglia, Anthony Bregaglia, posted it yesterday at his website. So apparently I wasn't the first to get to that.
Bregaglia, the one who has been, you know, ranting about all the naysayers and skeptics who have been criticizing the Roswell slides.
Now, it's very interesting. See, exactly. That's just it. Bregaglia, of all people, has been the one who apparently yesterday posted it on his site. And I'm thinking, so the guy who had been making the big case for the slide's authenticity is now the very one who apparently, even before me, had access to that information. I had to do a bit of digging around, and I was able to find that information in about 45 minutes. Bregaglia had it up on his site yesterday. To that point, here's what Paul Kimball says. He claims he just discovered it, but that seems awfully suspicious to me. Who knows with him? It's either, you know, he just basically kind of speculates about it. But, you know, again, I think that the question that's being raised, and I'll ask Paul more about it tomorrow, is did somebody have this information beforehand and went forward with this? And furthermore, how would someone have had that information? I don't want to speculate or make any accusations against Bregaglia or anybody else. But, you know, it wasn't hard for us, you know, after the images were released to determine the origins of this mummy. These guys who had this set of images, you know, at very least they had months to work with it, but more likely years. Mm-hmm. They weren't able to determine that, and yet when the proverbial fecal matter hits the spinning turbine here, all of a sudden that information is posted on the very website of one of the big promoters, not one of the directly involved promoters, but one of the advocates, I should say, i.e. Bregaglia. To me, it doesn't seem necessarily suspicious so much as it just – well, yeah, I guess it does seem kind of suspicious, but it also seems – just very strange to me, and it makes me question how much some of the individuals may have known beforehand going into this, in which case we look at it, and I think this is what Paul Kimball's asking too. You know, did these people have access to information that explained this away and promoted it as being some falsehood nonetheless? That seems to be at least a strong possibility, because how could we really chalk this all up to incompetence?
Yeah. Okay.
Can you?
No.
But honestly, dude, if anybody has issues with anything I've said here, I'm going to say, hey, you know what? Listen, you're the ones who are under the fire right now for promoting something that was obviously bogus. You either have to account for your incompetence in being able to discern and to solve this, or you have to be able to account for the fact that you did have this information and either overlooked or obfuscated with regard to your own presentation of what data you had. Because, dude, it doesn't take, you know, a genius, a rocket scientist, to look at these slides and see what this is, you know, and then finding the proof came swiftly thereafter. Yeah, I can't believe that these guys couldn't have figured this out in the amount of time they had to do it.
I agree with you totally, because when I was first told this story months ago and described these Roswell slides, I was very interested. I thought it would be like much like you've seen the old alien autopsy videos. I was expecting to see like an alien child or fetus.
And by the way, you know, an interesting coincidence is that the Santilli alien autopsy video was released on May the 5th of 1995.
Was it really?
20 years to the letter.
Wow, I did not know that.
20 years before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only Red Pill Junkie would be.
Right?
And it also seems that this guy, Santilli, he had nicknamed the alien dummy as Hilda. You know, and Hilda is the name of You're the lady kidding. Who allegedly took this slide. So, I don't know. You could call this
something
as coincidence. I see this more like the type of Twilight language. That
I see it more like a troll. Back. Somebody's massively trolling everybody.
Well, the universe is trolling us.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. When I was told this story, I was expecting a picture of a body sealed inside some kind of glass container in like a laboratory or something.
Yeah, like Independence Day or something.
Yeah, and if anybody hasn't gone and looked at the photo yet, I suggest you go do it. It looks to me like a picture of a mummy in a glass case. You can even see a woman in a dress. Mm-hmm. Behind the glass.
Or in a reflection if it's a mirrored back. Or, I can't tell. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look anything like a laboratory or some secret underground base. It looks like what Micah was describing. It looks like somebody loaned a museum, perhaps, mummy, and somebody, whoever this was, took a photograph of it. That's it. That's all it is.
What makes me sad, really, about this whole thing is that the fact that it is the remains of someone's child.
Well, exactly.
That's really what makes me sad about the whole thing. Look, and also, I'm ecstatic about the fact that instead of everybody taking this for what it is and face value, when the minute they saw this and like, yeah, it's instantly everybody's flags went up, and across the board, the community went to digging in to try to figure out what this was, instead of just saying, yep, that's what it is. We've got more alien, you know, instead of trying to hang their hat on it. The majority of people, I wouldn't say all, but the majority of the people tried to figure out that it wasn't real.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I like that. It seems like more and more, there's more, I guess you could say skepticism. There's more skepticism in the world today than there used to be. People want the right answer. Yes, very healthy skepticism.
I think it's really healthy. I mean, you know, we're all, you know, the four of us and many in the community are becoming more and more that way. And you know what's incredible is, you know, Cam, you bring to mind a very important point about this. Because, yes, you know, I don't know what the current status is on this mummy, but I presume that if that information hasn't been found, I'm going to be digging into it more this afternoon and this evening and everything. And so I'll be, keep everybody updated about that. But, you know, of course, you know, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act comes to mind, you know, NAGPRA mm-hmm. and a lot of this, you know, and it's interesting because I think that the mistreatment or the careless treatment of cases like this is what leads to in the overtly skeptical, which, you know, I debate, Red Pill will be happy to hear me say this, I debate, you know, the effectiveness or honestly the merit of even referring to myself as a skeptic by today's standards any longer. I've long championed that attitude, not fundamentally to my core. In every essence, consider myself a skeptic, you know, but the problem is that, you know, the modern skeptics, they will look at something like this and they won't say, hey, there have been some really good researchers out there who have helped blow the lid on this. No, they'll call the entire thing a washout and they'll make fun of the UFO community for, quote unquote, buying into it, when in fact, responsible members of the UFO community have been the very ones who have been skeptically trying to go about, you know, a proper assessment and analysis of this and the obvious revelation that it is nothing and that maybe unlike Neil deGrasse Tyson, I think in that anecdotal quote that was made where he said he thought it was hoaxed by somebody. It's not a hoax, but it was billed as something entirely, you know, far removed from what it actually was or was ever intended to be. And so I could see why in the modern skeptical community, sadly, there's probably a lot of people who would come around looking at this and say, look at not only the absurdity of the UFO community, but look at also the carelessness and the lack of sensitivity that they've shown for Native Americans and for, you know, indigenous peoples in going about all this. And that's the sad thing is that, you know, yes, sadly, there can be more harm than good done. And when we look at the number of issues involving race, not only here in America, as we've seen with Baltimore, and of course, with all the controversy and pertaining to the police shootings and whatnot, but on, you know, around the world in general, yes, there is a greater call for sensitivity, and I frankly think it's sad that the real social issues and the burning issues of our day, the issues of sensitivity and for equality, you know, that these things are not addressed, sadly, by the skeptical community. They want to point the finger because it's within this genre, and they have the ability to do so and to essentially troll one another and make a community of researchers who are interested in something, honestly, like we are, you know, unexplained aerial phenomena and the like. We want to look very seriously, scientifically, and carefully at this. We want to examine consciousness. We want to examine the great mysteries of our time, some of which, yes, the mainstream academic community are very dismissive of. And sadly, I look at a scenario like this with all the issues of sensitivity and ethnicity and things that, while undertones are still obviously present in it, as Cam pointed out correctly, and I cannot help but look at this entire fiasco, and I'll call it that, absolutely, as being very potentially detrimental to the community and having done more harm than good. This is the result of irresponsible behavior by those who are not true researchers and those who are going to apply ethics and intelligence and care to their analysis of purported events. They're just out there promoting, and whether or not they were trying to make a buck doing it, whatever they were trying to do, they were promoting more than they were actually researching, studying, and learning. And that has, I don't think it has had a good effect. And you know, we always have to sustain these sad repercussions in the aftermath of silliness.
Well, guys, let me ask you this, because Micah leads into it and it makes me, do you think, and Miguel, I'll start with you, do you think that someone will be held accountable for this? Is there something that's going to be done with the fact that people paid this money, they made all this, people, you know, they put a lot into this? You think there's going to be a way that, I mean, I wouldn't say, I guess you could say as far as in a law standpoint, or is there a way that ufology in general, is somebody going to be held accountable for this kind of stuff?
It's hard to say, you know, and I really don't see someone flat out suing Jaime Maussan, mm-hmm. you know, for showing false or hoax evidence, you know. I mean, Maussan has returned from this kind of problems again and again, right? I mean, Micah pointed out to that incident with the skinned monkey from a few years ago. Even before that, Maussan has been caught red-handed promoting clear hoaxes. Like, for example, this guy, Dr., quote-unquote, Jonathan Reed, you know, a guy who claimed to have an alien in his fridge.
Yes.
He also claimed to have some kind of time-traveled and bracelet and whatnot. And Maussan appeared on Mexican television, you know, in one of the most popular television programs from that time, you know, anyway, I don't remember the name, but anyway, the guy, to this day, he claims that the photo of the aliens and the photo of the monolith, you know, that he claims that they are still real, you know. So how do you come about with this guy? It's really difficult to ascertain whether he's full of the probability of fecal matter or whether he really genuinely believes, you know, in all these things, and he has just completely lost all sense of critical thinking. You know, it's difficult. I'm sure that by now he is building up the rhetoric that he's been attacked, you know, for all skeptics, because he's championing for the truth about the extraterrestrial revelations and all that, you know. And I'm sorry to say that down here in this country, the martyr rhetoric works really, really well to gain a lot of supporters. So as for Maussan, you know, I'm sure that he's still going to be around, you know, for better or for worse. And I'm sure that this is not the last we hear of him. About as for the rest of the people, well, he's not a member of the community. I think he couldn't care less. He was just in it for the money. I mean, it's clear as day that was his sole intention. Carrie and Schmidt, maybe those are the guys who really are more to blame, because they were the ones who were more involved with the alleged research in all of this, you know. They were the ones who should have known better, should have tried to be a little more critical, should have really tried to dig deeper into the whole story. And whether they knew beforehand that what they did had in their hands was nothing but a mummy, and I'll try to come back to that because I really have something to say on the matter. But whether they knew beforehand or whether they were blinded by their will to believe, as Paul Kimball often says, it's difficult to say, you know. But it's obvious to me that they are probably the ones who are going to lose a lot of credibility. And whether that means they were abandoned the field or not, it's difficult to say, you know. I mean, Schmidt kind of abandoned the field for a few years, and then he returned. He even made peace with his former associate Kevin Randall. Now I think they're okay back and on a feud again because of the slides. Who knows? And as for our friend Richard Dolan, well, I'm just really hoping that he's will able to live out of this whole mess and as unscathed as possible, you know, because, well, I think he was trying to remain as neutral and subjective as possible, but much to my regret, he accepted Maussan's invitation. I think he should have known better, but what I feel is that he shouldn't have been as trusting with his quote-unquote friends, right? So right now, that's how I see it.
Now, what about you, Micah? What do you think is going to end up coming from all of this?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, in terms of accountability, you know, I tell you honestly, I'm not a huge fan of, you know, just castigating people. I think that the internet troll culture is such that, you know, we just have to, you know, if somebody says one thing or another, you know, that's entirely out of line, you know, or they, you know, accidentally, you know, use a you know, P instead of a, you know, an H or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, or a PH instead of an F, you know, I mean, you see where I'm going here. I mean, people just like to try and nitpick and find any little thing and often take it out of context. And as we know, they're, you know, there are people who've done this with me too, as much integrity as I try to carry as a researcher. And there will always be people, as has been the case with me and Richard Dolan and others, who you try and write a book and sell a book, and you offer mm-hmm. that information to the public, and you're, you know, of course, you've lost credibility because you're trying to just, you know, make money off of something. Well, mm-hmm. I think that there are times where it's okay for someone to make money and still do all of this. And I don't think that if a person puts time, for instance, into writing a book, that they should necessarily, you know, be held over the coals for writing and then trying to sell that book that they've worked to produce. In this instance, with regard to a big case, you know, that has been high profile, money was charged for participation in this event by virtue of, you know, being able to either to attend or to be able to stream it online and whatnot. And then it turns out that, well, what you guys were promoting is entirely not what you said it was. And now there's some question based on whether they could have known that beforehand. Due to the fact that if there had been any serious methodical analysis being carried out, there should never have been any question. And the fact that they apparently had not managed to determine these things on their own really does leave some questions. Maybe we should give them the benefit of the doubt, and maybe we should chalk it up just to incompetence. You know, maybe that's fairer to them. Maybe Jaime Masson didn't ask any questions himself. He just jumped on and started promoting this, you know, as he has been, you know, known to do in the past. Is in terms of who should be held accountable for it, you know, if those who have promoted this are found to be, you know, in a position where they knew certain things and withheld those things from the public, it's not like this was, you know, a government operation or something like that. But I think that the great punishment will be if you had any credibility beforehand, that's been greatly diminished if you maintain any at all. You know, I hope sincerely for Richard Dolan, you know, as a friend of mine and a man I know to be of integrity and to be a guy who, you know, just like me or anybody else, you know, has been criticized for trying to profit from his interest in this phenomenon. You know, let me tell you something. Yeah, he may have had his expenses paid to come down to this event and everything. And if I had been in that situation, I was, you know, very quick to say this morning that, you know, of course I wouldn't have gone. And then I stopped myself and said, no, if someone had invited me to come to Mexico City and to participate in this event, knowing that Miguel was going to be there, you know, knowing that this was going to be something interesting, it's already on record. And at Mysterious Universe months ago, I wrote my feelings about what this was. That's on record. You know, I don't think I would have necessarily, you know, been in a position where I would have fallen out of favor with anyone had I accepted an invitation to go. But by virtue of my opinions on the matter, that's the very reason why people like me are never invited to be a part of things like this. Dolan, of course, took a slightly different attitude. He was much more open-minded, and he said, you know, and was saying even after the event that, you know, people, I don't think he really meant me or Nick Redfern, but sadly Redfern and I were definitely of the mind similar to those that Richard was kind of attacking. And he wasn't really attacking, but he was scolding, I think would be a better word. And he'd said, these people are ignorant. You know, you have no right, you know, based on the fact that you have no information, you weren't there, you haven't heard what the qualified experts had to say. And if you haven't been present for any of that, you know, you really shouldn't be so quick to judge. Well, you know, I just differ with Rich on that point, but, you know, I can differ with somebody and respect them. And I hope that on those grounds, and I'm sure, you know, there have been many times he and I've disagreed in the past, but again, being a gentleman, he is a person who he doesn't disagree with somebody and therefore he attacks them, blogs about them all the time, you know, makes snide comments about them and does everything he can possibly do to engage in character assassination of that individual. He just doesn't operate like that. I hope the community will show Richard the same respect because he's a gentleman. He's always tried to carry himself with integrity. And it's just unfortunate that by virtue of being invited to be at this event, you know, that people are now kind of associating him with it. So, you know, in conclusion, I don't know that necessarily accountability apart from just, you know, the lack of credibility will you know, be incurred as though wrath of God, you know, something like that. You know, and I don't know necessarily that it's really warranted because, again, I try to put things in perspective. And I know that within the little microcosm of the unexplained community in which we operate, this has been a pretty big story. But guys, in the grand scheme of things, in terms of world affairs and all the things that we face as a civilization, this is a fly on the ass of the world.
Well, we are so glad that you two were able to join us today and to hear your thoughts on it. Is there anything new going on that or anything you'd like to plug, Micah, before we let you go?
Oh, I mean, not, yeah, I've always got 100 million things going on. But I'll tell you this, something that, you know, has come to mind as a result of all of this, you know, Red Pill and I are always talking about writing projects and projects and ideas and things like that. And I'm not necessarily responding to critics of the UFO community in trying to do this, but I want to do a quick flip flop and say something that I find rather interesting. You know, I'm a person, I'm a writer, and I know what it's like to try and make a living doing what you do, but also write about things that you're interested in. And I think that, you know, it is a problem because I've seen in the past, again, that there's been, I think, a lot of unfair criticism of Richard Dolan because Richard has very openly said on his radio program that he, you know, gives lectures, he travels and does appearances, does television, writes books, and makes a lot of his living by doing UFO research. Especially on the forums online, I've seen a lot of people that go, you know, as soon as a person, you know, gets away from doing just real research and then they just, you know, they make their living off of going and appearing at all these events and associating themselves with whoever, that's when they lose credibility. And I'm looking at all these things and I'm thinking, you know, it's really unfair for people to go after some guy who was at one time considered, you know, the knight in shining armor for the UFO community. And it just shows how, you know, not that he isn't still. I'm just saying that, you know, people in the public, their attitudes are so fickle. And as soon as, you know, it's okay if you are a researcher, but as soon as you start getting successful, you know, now you've sold out. I think that's so mm-hmm. silly. So I look at that and you know, my response actually, I guess, should be I want to write more books and sell more books and throw that in people's faces. But by the same token, you know, does that really solve the problem? Maybe not. And there are, I think, what we learned from the Roswell slide situation is that the individuals who had access to these files, rather than sharing them with the public, they kept them to themselves, you know. And Paul was talking about this with me earlier, Paul Kimball, that, you know, this is the need for open exchange of ideas and information.
Right.
Because if this information could have been shared with the community rather than kept away, and then there's this big public reveal, and then it's like, you know, a volcano erupting, and of course, you know, lava flies and lands everywhere and burns everybody, and people got burned real good this time. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that sometimes there does need to be more openness, more dialogue. And I've thought very seriously for a while about creating, you know, maybe a website that would serve as an interface for communication about the UFO subject. Now, sadly, I think that there has to be certain moderation and restriction on something like this. And I'm just sounding off an idea here with you guys since we're just, you know, talking. But you know, when I say moderation and restriction, I think that, you know, you can't have every Tom, Dick, and Harry coming in here sharing ideas, you know, about or you know, just craziness, frankly, a lot of which we see in the UFO community. But if a select group of writers maybe were to begin to really, and not to say that there aren't already blogs and sites that have groups of writers who are already attempting to try and do this, there are some. But, you know, I'm thinking that right now we've talked for a long time about there needing to be a new attitude and a new approach brought to, you know, UFO studies. I have been toying with the idea myself lately, and the idea that maybe something that would be freely available to the public that would provide information that is maybe to an extent, you know, within the community and when warranted maybe by others, that would be peer reviewed to an extent, you know, open to the scrutiny of, you know, responsible ethical researchers rather than something that is, you know, just being put into a book to be sold. You know, if there were a way that a website could be put together like this, that maybe there could be some sort of, you know, revenue generation, but that all the information can still be provided freely to the public, you know, it could be a win-win, and maybe something that, you know, a few researchers in the community would be willing to put a little time and effort behind. You know, whatever the case is, I think that, you know, the lesson that we've learned here is that we do need a little bit more transparency and a little more openness, and within, at very least, the community itself, a kind of peer review, in that we allow our peers to see what we're doing, when warranted, talk about things, and we open ourselves to, or maybe we should say expand our perspectives, yeah? See what I did there? So that we don't become too one-sided in our approaches and opinions. Had the guys who were promoting these slides really wanted to try and get to the bottom of this, and had they involved other critically minded researchers, this whole fiasco could have been avoided. And so that's my big takeaway from this is, you know, maybe, you know, my objective is to try and open more and to present more to the public. And, you know, in a fair way that is both fair to the public and also to the researchers involved, to try and give more information that is freely accessible and available. Because if our goal in the end is really to move forward and have no understanding, I'm kind of thinking now that's the only way that it's going to happen.
Right. Red Pill, what are your closing thoughts?
What Micah said. No, I still, let me point out, guys, I still feel a bit confused with regards to the forensic report that was given by the experts that Maussan presented. You know, that still keeps me a bit of pause. So Maussan, on his Be Witness website, published the report elaborated by Salsen. Now the problem is that it's in Spanish, right? So I'm not really sure if they are going to be willing to publish an English translation of it. So right now I'm trying to go through it, and it's boring as hell. And obviously, I wouldn't be equipped to do the translation myself. Also, because you know it will take me so much time. So I'm still confused about that. Maybe people will attack me right now, but maybe I'm really not sure if even though we have pretty much established that this thing was found in some museum, right? And the placard next to it said it was a child, the mummy of a two-year-old child. I still don't know that maybe the mummy itself had some kind of weird anatomical features in it to become a genuine mystery. Or maybe these people were influenced by who was asking them to do the report, that is Jaime Maussan, so expecting to show that the body was of an extraterrestrial. Maybe if Maussan had approached them from an anonymous point of view and asked some people, you know, independently without knowing what they were going to analyze, and say, okay, can you tell me about what you see in this slide? Maybe they would have given a completely different report and not talking about all these alleged anatomical difference that they found in this one single image or not. That's still something that maybe we need to address, because right now what I see even with the English-speaking researchers is they are completely focusing on deciphering the placard, finding out where the mummy was located, and great. I think that's what we do, but we also need to see what about this. And I feel that Richard was the one who said, you know, I mean, people are jumping out on all this before taking the forensic report into consideration. I'm really not sure right now whether it's beside the point at this moment, or whether we should indeed try to give the benefit of the doubt to the report.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you so much for coming on and giving us your thoughts. You guys take care, okay?
Okay, guys.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Very interesting topic, very interesting discussion. I love those two guys. And I really appreciate and I honor their thoughts. You know, they're very well thought. They're very well thought out men, and they have really interesting ideas. And I mean, look, as like we always say, I'm not 100% saying that it's not an alien body, but man, I would have to say 99% of me believes that it looks like a mummified child.
It looks like a mummified child to me, and I even had brought up the thing that bothers me the most is that it is somebody's child.
Yeah.
But it's somebody's, who knows
somebody's
how long it
used
is.
To make money.
Yes. They've exploited something that, I mean, in the photograph, folks, please do yourself a favor. I understand if you don't have time right now. If you get a chance to make sure you go to the website, make sure you go and check out slidebox.com. Go check that out where you can get a good look at this photograph, because instantly you're going to see it and you're going to be the same way. You're going to be like, oh, it's in a display case.
It's in a display case. You can see a person standing on the other side.
Yeah.
And it has a placard that's blurry, but I'm sure it's a placard describing what it is.
And it's conveniently the placard's blurry. Conveniently, that's the one slide they wanted everybody to see. I feel bad because I feel like it's in a little sideshow or a little roadside museum like we always laugh about. Always have the coolest stuff. I feel like it's just laying in there. I don't know. I have a bad thing. I don't know. The whole thing
makes me
kinda
mad, because it's much like we always get pissed at the Bigfoot hoaxes, the Rick Dyers and stuff, and they come up with these, and they've done it multiple times. The same thing is happening over here in the ufology world with this, the Atacama alien that Dr. Greer had posted a couple years ago, and then Alashenka and the Metapec alien in Mexico. I mean, this happens from time to time, but it really does look like they've knew it this whole time and that they saw a chance to make a lot of money.
They set on it and
Miguel
waited
said there were 6,500, 7,000, maybe 10,000 people that attended it live, and there's no telling how many pay-per-views, live streams that they sold for the unveiling of this. And, yeah, it looks like it's fake.
It's very disheartening. It's very disheartening, and it does, I think it there's a possibility it could strike a pretty rough blow to ufology in the world's eyes, because it makes everybody look like they're gullible kids again. You're all over the Guinness. You're like, yay.
Well, this is another reason. This is exactly why so many top scientists and educators don't want to touch this subject, because of bullshit like this.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I mean, it discredits there are a faction of people that legitimately are interested in trying to solve the UFO phenomenon and take it very serious. And things like this is what ruins it.
Yeah, it does. Know? Well, folks, thanks so much for listening. Thanks. I hope you really enjoyed that. We did. Like I said, go check it out for yourself. Do a little reading up on it. It's everywhere. Our buddy, Mr. Nick Redfern, he's written a couple of amazing articles on it over there on Mysterious Universe's blog. And, he did a great job. And like I said, you can check out and listen and all that stuff. Also, Micah himself is going to be covering quite a bit of it on the Graylin Report. So he's going to be talking about it. And then I'm sure Richard Dolan will be talking about what he found out while he was down there over there on KGRA. So make sure you check it all out. We've got a bunch of friends that are involved in this whole thing. So if it's something that's it's kind of up your alley, like, we're going to be looking into it. So just kind of, keep your ears open. Check it all out and see what you think. So thanks for coming in. I hope everybody has a super safe and happy week. Hope the weather's looking better for everybody. Not everybody's got webbed feet just yet from all the rain we got coming down. For all you elite listeners, we will see y'all on Thursday. For everybody else, we'll catch up with you Monday. Y'all take care. We love you. And stay out of trouble.
Peace.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.